The tiki lifestyle is exploding in popularity these days, with tiki bars featuring vivid and potent rum drinks served in whimsical and colorful mugs. Aloha shirts abound, and bamboo and wood carvings adorn the walls. Tiki files gather at conventions and spend hundreds of dollars on those mugs. Some fans even build tiki bars in their homes. But with all the fun and whimsy, some native voices are being raised, questioning whether some of the tiki symbolism is appropriate or if it is in fact appropriation. In light of that, many in the tiki community are modifying the old-fashioned tiki model and coming up with new alternatives that keep the fun and immersive decor while ditching some of the cliches. We surf the waves of the controversy when Fox 11 News In-Depth starts right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In-Depth. Today, we're talking tiki. Not necessarily the intoxicating rum-based drinks, but rather the intoxicating culture that's been around for generations. The tiki movement is, if anything, stronger than ever. We're chatting with the founder of Chun Tikis, Julio Gutierrez. Julio, good to see you. Thank you very much for joining us down there in Long Beach. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you. First, tell me, what does tiki mean, and what is that all about? I know it's something that's revered by many. I know it's something that goes back generations.
Yeah, so tiki itself is actually a native word that means man of God or God. That's the true origin name of tiki. The tiki culture, on the other hand, will make you believe that it actually comes from Asian Polynesian, lifestyle. The thing is, tiki really was built in a Hollywood studio in the 1930s by a guy named Don Beach. He was a rum runner throughout Prohibition and saw the idea of a lot of need for escapism, specifically post World War One. A lot of things that were happening that people just wanted to escape. Obviously, you're at the brink of the Great Depression. And he saw an opportunity to kind of create a scene, which then was tiki. So in short, it's a manufactured lifestyle from a Hollywood producer from the 30s, encompassing, again, everything that is escapism and exotic for the general public.
Well, what do you think is the lingering appeal of tiki?
Well, it is probably that. It's the escapism, the idea that for the most parts, we live in giant metropolitan cities. We want to have an escape of the everyday 9-to-5 rat race, you know? So being able to escape into a room that doesn't seem like you're in LA, for example, and you're surrounded by lush greenery, exotic music, these bright colored drinks, the idea that you could essentially cosplay for a couple of hours, not have to live your normal life. I think that's the appeal that it still lingers today. People want to have something more than just your 9-to-5 day jobs.
Or when you're driving, or when you're driving down the 405 freeway in rush hour traffic, you're dreaming of a place you can go to far away, but it's actually around the corner, maybe.
Well, exactly,
tiki bars,
exactly,
as you pointed out, started here in Southern California.
Yeah.
So there's sort of a, you know, this SoCal connection and actually foundation for some of these things that we've seen pop up over the years. But it's all about this, as you point out, this sort of element of fantasy.
And you're right. The first bar that was opened up was by Don Beach in 1933 here in Hollywood, I believe. He was one of the first guys that actually started that. He slowly started opening up more and more when he saw the need, or there was a need for it, that people wanted to come to these tiki bars. And then there was a guy up in the Bay Area, Trader Vic, who saw that opportunity, wanted to partner up with Don Beach. They did not see eye to eye to that. So he took that same idea and opened up the Trader Vic's up in the Bay Area. He then actually found a way to commercialize it by creating tiki mugs and creating more paraphernalia so people could start taking those home, not being subjected to just having to experience that idea just at the specific bar or restaurant.
All right, well, stay where you are because we're going to have you back a little bit later on in the show. And Fox 11 News In Depth continues as we take a look at a mixologist who's got a lot to say about the tiki culture. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. Chalky Tom is a mixologist and a brand representative who has a different take on tiki culture. As a person with Walker River, Paiute, and Pomo ancestry, she created Dumersive, I guess that's how you say it, a cocktail pop-up that puts a new spin on things. And am I saying that right, Chalky? Dumersive?
Yeah, Dumersive is what we called it. Originally, we had started as Doom Tiki, but it was always our plan to stop using the word tiki. And because we're subversive and immersive, and we use Doom Metal as our aesthetic, Dumersive is what we came up with as a way to move forward and improve things.
Well, I think that's an interesting word. I'm a wordsmith, so I appreciate when people come up with new ones. You call yourself an indigenous hospitality advocate. What exactly does that mean?
Well, being indigenous, like a native Californian in every sense of the word, there is very little representation for us in the drinks and hospitality industry. And we've made various contributions from ingredients to our lands being where this industry thrives. So I've made sure to create space for people from my community and lead conversations dealing with some of the issues and stuff that comes up. And, you know, some of it is appropriative, some of it is overcoming stereotypes, and a lot of it has been collaborative with other Indigenous people that are Maori, Pacifica, and Native Hawaiian that we are having these conversations with.
Yeah. We've heard issues about tiki culture from a number of voices lately, particularly in the Pacifica culture, including Samoa, Tonga, and other Pacific nations. Can you tell us what those objections are?
Well, it's pretty easy. If you're from a dominant culture, going into another one that's still dealing with the effects of colonization, which is a permanent status of being, and you're cherry picking things from that culture without acknowledging the people or treating them like modern people that exist, it's sort of like an act of violence. And, you know, by taking these things and overlooking all the other issues, you know, it's just not okay. It's just an unequal balance of power, and it's harmful. And, you know, there have been a lot of conversations about it. I'd really say in the last 5 to 7 years that, you know, people have actually been listening to people from these different communities. But for the most part, like when people from these communities, they're like, you're using these images that are sacred to us, that we were punished by outsiders for using and trying to maintain our culture, and you're profiting from it and you're disrespecting it. That's when there needs to be change.
Are there specific parts of tiki bars that present more of a challenge culturally?
Well, the first part is, you know, tiki as a lifestyle is a uniquely American thing. And there's sort of like a sense of nostalgia in American culture for like a time that didn't exist. So that starts with like one problem because it's not really kind of like that real. And also tiki cherry picks different things from different cultures, whether it be Cantonese food that's been bastardized for the American palate. Even Tex-Mex has some ties to it. You know, some of these, like some of the vessels that you drink out of, you know, some of the real things were destroyed because it wasn't considered Christian and things like that. You know, like even some of the original recipes have ties into like Filipino desserts. Rum has a varied history. So if you're taking like a hodgepodge of things and you're putting it all together and you're calling a culture and you're not actually interacting with the people from those communities, that is highly problematic.
Well, you mentioned vessels. Let's talk about one I've got right here. This would be a vessel in the form of a tiki character there. What's your thought about this?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't use anything like that. There's so many better alternatives. You can even go into your own culture and find things that, like, are yours. You don't have to go take from somebody else's culture. And that just takes away from these sacred items, these ancestral items, these things that you know, have needed to be preserved. And, you know, it removes the people, it removes the culture, it removes the value that it has outside of just a kitschy fun drink.
Does it, I'm being told that you actually have some mugs that you've created, and can we talk about that for a second?
Well, part of the thing with us having a, like, doom metal aesthetic is that we've replaced taking things from other people's cultures, and we've replaced it with heavy metal and satanic imagery for two reasons. One, it's fun, it's ridiculous, and that's why people look for these immersive things. And two, on top of that, like, it really makes people that come from dominant religions like Christianity a little uncomfortable. And we want to provoke people to be like, well, you're serving this drink in a mug that you're working out looks like a burning church, and that makes me feel disrespected. Then we can be like, well, how do you think these other people feel when you're using their ancestral, like, religious iconography for your vessels? You know, here's a place that we can have a common ground and start these conversations.
You know, another thing, though, that has met with some resistance has been the sort of the half-naked island maiden that we've seen forever. And that's got an aura of sexism, is that right? Is that sort of the prevailing pushback?
It's not even that it's just sexism. It's why would you offer or why would you assume that the women of a community that you consider paradise that you're taking over are part of what's being offered to you? And there are real world consequences when you objectify women and you, like, hold up this dusky maiden trope. It means that women are sexualized, and that means, like, sometimes they're attacked and there's issues because they think because someone's going to look like a sexy hula dancer, that means that they're available. And if you're in paradise, part of enjoying it is enjoying the people there. And that takes away, you know, it takes away the power of people. It takes away, like, respect. And it also, like, you know, others these people and strips them of their humanity.
Other than you, and I say that in a very positive way, are there others who are doing things the right way?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, first and foremost, I always refer people to the Pacifica Project, which is led by two Pacifica people within our industry that are really the first people that you should be going to. There's Condor's Cove, which is based on Bolivian cultural aspects. There's Shore Leave in Boston that has an immersive kind of, like, beach vibe without it taking from any cultures. There's Chuntiki's, who we're speaking with, that takes Chicano and Mexican and Indigenous history and uses the drinks to kind of tell a story. And then just as more and more bars are open, like there's Sunken Harbor in Brooklyn that just opened, people are embracing leaving the problematic elements out, still creating an escape experience. But, you know, maybe instead of using somebody's ancestors, you use a cool bamboo mug, or you use a cool, you know, bird, or you find something local from where you're from and use that. I mean, even if you're from the Midwest and you want to create a Midwestern immersive cocktail, you know, you can find, like, things from your family's history. You can find things from the town you're from.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, you know, there are ways to have fun with this. That's the point you're trying to make. So are there ways tiki culture can adapt to keep the fun and the whimsy without that sense that it's downgrading anyone's culture?
The first thing that's the most important is collaboration. Being inspired by a culture and reinterpreting it through your lens is not okay to do, but going to these different communities and working with them, like, I know the Inferno Room in the Midwest, they went to different island communities and worked with local artisans. You know, it's only collaborative and culturally empowering the right thing to do if you work with the right people, instead of just saying, well, we've been doing this one way for 70 years and it has history, so that's okay. You actually have to go to the right communities and talk to the right people, and also accept when someone's like, no, that mug that you think is cute is not okay, like the Mr. Bally High one, which is just a brown face with a bone through it. It's one of the most offensive things I've ever seen. And, you know, when people bring these things up, you need to just change them.
You know, it's interesting. I can remember growing up, and, you know, I've been growing up for a long time there, I'll tell you. I can tell you that I remember the advent of the Polynesian restaurants, the Trader Vic's, the Contiki's, the places that sort of drew attention because they were interesting, they were fun, they were unusual. And what was your sense of those?
Well, it's kind of one of these things where America likes to experience things if it's theatrical. You know, like if we go to a Mexican restaurant in America, you expect to see certain things on the wall, certain aesthetics, you know, certain music. If you go to a Chinese restaurant or an Indian restaurant, you expect to, like, you know, Americans want to be entertained while they eat. And Tiki did play a big role of it. Tiki did play a big role with that. But also, like, you know, it's kind of unfortunate that, you know, your culture has to be on display and othered for it to be profitable and enjoyed. And then with kind of creating these fake cultural things, it undervalues like authenticity until some foodie decides that like real tacos are like suddenly cool again.
Clearly culture is important. And each one of our own cultures are important to us. And so over time, as we've seen, ideas of what is good change. And they change sometimes for the better, and sometimes they change and dip into controversy. But, you know, things change. And so as sort of a final thought, where would you like to see Tiki go going forward?
I think that for it to go forward, we need to be listening to the communities that are most affected by it, be it the Asian community, the Pacifica community, the Indigenous community, and any other community that doesn't want to be misrepresented. If you want to move forward, you have to have consent and collaboration. And it's pretty easy just to take all the racist, sexist, and backward stuff out and create an experience that's welcoming for everybody. I mean, escape doesn't have to be at the expense of other people's dignity and culture.
Chucky Tom, good to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, a spirited take on the tiki genre blends Latin American themes with a tiki bass for a spicy mix in Long Beach. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. We're chatting with the founder of Chuntiki's, Julio Gutierrez. And first of all, you know, you told us at the beginning of the program what tiki was all about. What does Chuntiki mean?
Well, it's kind of a play on words on the word tiki and chunti. If you're from LA, if you're from any type of a Mexican descendants, you probably heard the word chunti before. It's essentially a classist slur word to kind of put someone else down within your own race, I would say.
It's a bit of a slur there, but you've managed
it
to
is.
Turn
essentially
that.
It's a,
yeah, but you've managed exactly. to turn so that it's a into bit something a, upbeat.
Correct. So the idea with chuntikis, it's like, it's also the slur, the derogatory term could also be something like, oh, this guy's wearing too much, I don't know, cologne, too many, like, you know, pointy boots, something that looks too Mexican, if you will, right? Or too Hispanic, they would call that guy a chunti. And also with the idea of taking that slur word and kind of taking the made up, what I think the made up culture of tiki, I just mashed them both together because I just thought it was just hilarious. How do I make the chunti, the tiki culture as chunti as possible, if that makes sense?
All right. So considering the words chuntiki, could this be the future of tiki, a multicultural melange of mixed messages?
I hope so. I mean, I think there's definitely space for all of that. The way the project works with Chuntikis is that we educate through the drinks. So all the drinks that are made are using a lot of inspiration of the classical tiki drink specs, but actually working them to make them tell a story. And there's a reason why you're having that drink. We also use a platform to educate why the original thing of chuntikis, or sorry, of tiki might be a little bit offensive to some people, might be appropriative. How do we actually appreciate the culture as opposed to appropriate the culture? Specifically right now that we're seeing a lot of brown pride happening with, like, you know, the growth of Norteño music and cumbias hitting now the mainstream. How do we make it so it's still something that's available for all without actually being exploited? I do the same thing with the, essentially with the drinks. The Chantiki Project is help people understand our culture. You've been loving the culture. You've been loving our food. Here are some stories about our culture. And if you come out to the events, you're probably going to get a sense of education along with your cocktails that I'm serving.
All right. So let me pop in because I want to ask you about your pop-up. And that's called Marie's Tech Tech, and that's down in Long Beach. And tell me about that. What is that?
So Marie's Tech Tech is actually a bar here in Long Beach that I have hosted many pop-ups at. Marie's Tech Tech is a Mesoamerican bar. So their idea is that it's a Mesoamerican tropical bar. Doesn't really rely on the aspects of traditional Polynesia tiki. It relies more on our ancestry, really, which is Mesoamerica, Aztec imagery, and stuff like that. So they use more of those imagery to create a different take on what would be your normal Polynesia and Hawaiian tiki bar.
That's how you connect these two genres, right? And so, you know, do you think that there are people who might be put off by that, or do you think that that's something that people can embrace?
I think it's something that people could embrace, and at the same time, there might be traditionalists that will be put off by that. It happens often that people don't want change in their tradition, right? If it's already ingrained as classic Americana, why are you changing that up? And it makes sense that a lot of people just are not open to change. But at the same time, we've been seeing it all over the states and other parts of the world where people are actually opening up tropical bars that are not necessarily tiki bars using that whole Polynesian imagery.
Right, right. All right. Julio Gutierrez, thanks for joining us from down there in Long Beach. And Fox 11 News in Depth continues right after this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And finally, if you haven't already, please check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in Depth. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.